Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmerica.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And in just a moment, Amy Goodman will be with us. Ah, here she is, in fact. Welcome. Amy, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
It's great to see you again. You, first of all, let me just, for your benefit, I don't know if this will be of any value. Yesterday afternoon at 2 o'clock, 2:30, Janet Robert, who owns the local progressive station here in town, and I are sitting having lunch down here in town. And three cops chase this kid down the street, grab him in front of us, throw him to the ground, and he's down, he's subdued, and one of them starts banging his head into the cement. And Janet and I are watching this. I mean, it's just like horrific. And this is essentially what has happened to you as well. I mean, there's you and two of your producers who are here with you. Let me just tell us your story here.
We'll give you the chronology as it went down.
And first of all, let me just, for our listeners who may not know, which I doubt there's even more than three of them, but Amy Goodman, the host of Democracy Now!, the website democracynow.org.
Right, Amy and it's Goodman. On public radio and television around the United States.
Right.
And our whole team here is covering the convention and what's happening in the streets, the major protests that are happening there. So yesterday was a big day, Labor Day. There was a major anti-war protest outside the first day of the convention inside. There were about 10,000 protesters outside. And we were all inside and outside the convention. And while we'll begin, it was around 3:30 or so. And our producers, Sharifa Gokaduce and Nicole Salazar, were over at 7th and Jackson here in St. Paul. I was on the convention floor interviewing delegates from Alaska and moving over to the Minnesota section. And, well, Nicole Salazar, why don't you start by describing what happened to you right there at 7th and Jackson.
Right. Hi. Basically, we had come down onto the street because we had seen some riot cops moving down the street, and we wanted, just to follow them and see what was happening. We ended up just a few blocks away from the offices that we had just left, basically being what appeared to be getting corralled by officers. There were officers on horseback, other officers on bicycles, other riot cops. We had moved into this intersection. We were watching them, tear gas protesters. We were moving
Nicole
away.
Nicole was videotaping all of this.
That's
right.
Great.
I had my
That's
camera.
Great.
I had run out of the office with my camera. I was moving back but filming, moving back, filming back. They were coming towards me. They basically pushed us back into this parking lot, at which point, they were getting closer. I videotaped them telling one person who identified himself as a journalist, "I don't care. Move, move." We were moving. One protester was running away, ran by me right in front of the camera, and you can see it on the tape. An officer takes his wooden rod and knocks her to the ground. She falls out of frame. I keep trying to move back. They're saying, "Move." I say, "Where do you want me to go?" I'm trying to get back, and I'm holding up my press pass in my hand, in my left hand. My camera's in my right hand, and at that point, they slam me back into the cars, and I'm surrounded by officers. They push me to the ground, say, "Get your face to the ground." And I'm trying to, tell them that I'm pressed and hold up my pass and hold on to my camera so they won't take it from me. But at that point, they take my arms, put them behind my back. An officer puts his foot on my back. I see officers all around me, and someone else is, holding my face to the ground while I'm trying to tell
you,
them that I'm pressed.
You paused as you said they told you to put your face to the ground. Mm-hmm. Were they using obscenity? I realize this is a very, very small point,
no.
But it's really a point to the tone of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember them using obscenities.
Okay.
I just remember them repeating it.
Yeah.
And no matter how much I would insist that I'm pressed, they wouldn't respond to what I was saying. They just seemed to have you know, one thing on their mind, which was getting everybody there to the ground, and yeah. I could see around me other people.
I'm curious about
one officer had his boot on her back, and right. another was pulling her leg as they were telling her to keep her head down.
Right.
Which would have meant her head would have been dragged in the gravel. Already it was bloody.
Right. Right. I'm curious about the response of the people around. We were sitting at a restaurant in an outdoor cafe, and right across the street is another outdoor cafe that was filled with folks from the convention, mostly Republicans. And when this kid was having his head smashed into the ground, and there was a woman videotaping this at the time, they all stood up and applauded the cops beating this kid up. I'm guessing you didn't have the same kind of audience. And wonder what happened.
At that moment, I didn't really have the presence of mind to look at anything other than what was happening right, you know, right in front of me. I was very overwhelmed, and I was scared, and I was shouting, and I was just thinking I need to hold on to my camera.
And the videotape at democracynow.org is pretty scary as the
yeah.
police move in on her. And Sharif was right there, and then they moved in on him.
Right, and this was Nicole Salazar we heard from just a moment ago. We're talking, of course, with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, and here's Sharif. Sharif, I'm sorry, your last name?
Abdel Kaddous.
Abdel Kaddous, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I was with Nicole the entire time we left her office, and as she described, she was filming most of what was happening in the streets, this police crackdown. They were firing at point-blank range, rubber bullets, pepper spray, as well as smoke bombs and concussion grenades on these protesters. Everyone ended up in that parking lot, and I was more on the outskirts, and Nicole very bravely was inside filming what was happening. Mm-hmm. I saw her get manhandled and tackled down by three very large police officers, upon which I ran inside. I held up my mic above my head, and I held out my press pass with my other hand. I kept saying, "I'm with the press. She's my colleague. You have to release her." Upon which I was very violently tackled into the wall, then thrown to the ground, kicked in the chest twice, and then very roughly handcuffed behind my back. I kept yelling the entire time, "I'm with the media, I have credentials around my neck, I have a press pass, I have an RNC pass." That didn't seem to matter at all. They were just focused on arresting me. I looked over and I saw Nicole about 20 feet away, also on her stomach with her hands behind her back. I called to her and she looked over. Her face was bloodied from her nose down all over her chin. She said she was okay, but it was quite a frightening sight.
At that point, I got a call from another producer who had witnessed this, from Mike Burke. I was on the floor of the convention, and they said, "Hurry, Sharif and Nicole have been arrested." I ran from the convention center down to 7th and Jackson. There was a row of riot police. I went right up to the riot police, and I said, "Can I speak to your commanding officer? My producers are in there. They need to be released." And they grabbed me immediately, pulled me through the line, pulled my arms forcefully behind my back, and they immediately handcuffed me with my arms behind my back, these very rigid plastic handcuffs that we're all still suffering from, trying to feel our fingers right now
yeah.
as they held
I saw the video
like that for a couple hours.
It looked pretty grim.
They pulled me to the back. They forced me to the ground. I saw Sharif. I demanded to stand with Sharif. I saw that his arm was bloodied and that he had dirt over his T-shirt. I demanded to see Nicole. I couldn't find her. They said she was probably in the wagon already. I said, "This is outrageous. You know we're all fully credentialed, and we're wearing our credentials."
Right.
I had just come from the convention floor, so I also had my security pass to be on the convention floor. And I said, "Look at this. Here's my convention pass." Secret Service comes over. They rip away the convention pass. So that was the end of that. And they just wouldn't respond. I said, "Well, then where's the receipt? If police take anything from you, they have to give a receipt that shows they have taken it from you." They would not do that. That was the end of that.
He took mine as well.
Did they give them back to you?
No.
No. And
so you had to get a whole new set of credentials.
We didn't have yesterday's credentials,
yeah.
right. And so then we were moved into the police wagon. Nicole and I, they separate men and women, brought to the jail. Because we were being charged differently, they moved me into, where they're keeping the protesters who are charged with misdemeanor is in a police garage with pens set up inside. That's where they put me. I was continuing to say, "This is absolutely unacceptable. I am a journalist. You know it clearly. You see my credentials given by the national security event." You know, this is
right.
a national security event, the RNC. These are given by the RNC. The St. Paul police officer behind the correctional officers just kept shouting, "You shut up, you shut up, you shut up." I was totally taken aback. The corrections officers then processed me. I was there for a couple of hours. I was charged with misdemeanor. I was told that my colleagues were charged with a felony, which is why they were going to jail. They were held longer than I was and ultimately released, and they faced felony riot charges.
So, Sharif and Nicole, you're facing felony riot charges?
That's correct, yeah. That's right.
And the charges you're facing, Amy Goodman?
I have been charged. They are. They were arrested on those charges. We'll see if they will be fully charged. I went to the news conference this morning, by the way, interestingly, by the St. Paul Police Chief Harrington, and I asked him about this, confronted him. How are they dealing with journalists? I mean, I saw it in a little way right there.
Right.
The police would only allow in a few journalists to this press briefing, to the press. They said because it was very crowded. We went inside, it was empty, but there were dozens of police officers along the side. In fact, one of the officers who had processed me was right there. And I demanded to know, what is their policy with the press? That they are arresting them? Are they going to drop the charges against us? He said there will be an investigation. I asked what happened with the AP photographer, another reporter who was taken that night. We don't know what's happened to him.
He was with me in my cell.
Yeah.
But he didn't go and Sharif did.
This is, of course, we're talking with Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, and her producers, Sharif Abdelkaddous and Nicole Salazar. This is also micro to the macro. There's a larger issue of the giant crackdown that's going on here that you all have been reporting on. Can you stick around through the break? We're going to take a break right now, and we'll come back and we'll talk about what else you've actually seen in addition to the experience that you just had that you so eloquently described. Thank you very much. Amy Goodman with us, Sharif Abdelkaddous, and Nicole Salazar. Democracy Now!, of course, the website for the Democracy Now! Program. It's Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. The Republican National Police Riot? I don't know. We've got to come up with a new title for this thing. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Twenty-one minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, broadcasting live coast to coast with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, one of my favorite people, one of my favorite programs, democracynow.org.
Back
you can check
at you,
it out.
Tom.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you. And we're also here with Sharif Abdelkaddous and Nicole Salazar, two of his producers, and the three of you all got busted yesterday. We just heard that whole story. What else did you see going on? What's going on out there? I haven't, frankly, had an opportunity to get out in the middle of it. I had to go speak at the SEIU gig yesterday afternoon, and which is on the island on the other side, and I missed it. What's going on?
We're talking pepper spray. We're talking rubber bullets.
Rubber bullets, by the way, are
being fired at point-blank range from very close by on these protesters. Concussion grenades, smoke bombs. And I'd just like to add on a side note, I mean, while it's very important, this issue of the media being harassed, we got the treatment was on the very light side compared to what happened to these protesters. These are scrawny kids who are being tackled down very violently, much worse than we were. Getting tear gassed directly into their faces. And I think most people are missing that as well, is that this is an excessive use of force.
You know, when we were in the parking lot and we were all dealing with our own being handcuffed and pushed to the ground or thrown to the ground or booted to the ground, as Nicole was, I think it's very important to point out when we could pick up our heads. Right around, when I looked over at Sharif across the way, Sharif was bloodied at the arm, but right behind him was a man whose head was wrapped in gauze. And me, it was people who were in various, were either laying there, some were groaning. This is America. This is St. Paul. This is, by the way, the Democratic Convention, the Republican Convention, whatever the party is, it's supposed to be a celebration of democracy. And, Nicole, you were filming this.
Absolutely. And when I was, after they had taken the battery out of my camera and the camera was off, I was continuing to look around me as much as I could. And I saw one girl who had her shirt ripped off. She was, she was naked from the waist up. Another kid who had blood all over his face. Another kid who seemed to be, they had mucus coming out of their noses. Kids were really badly beat up and lying on the floor not knowing what to do.
And this I mean, this is America. This is not supposed to happen here. And by the way, the local press, I have been listening to the local, you know, driving in and out, you hear the local press, and they're reporting it as, well, it's no big deal. There's not much going on. There's a few anarchists. You know, they broke a window at Macy's yesterday.
This morning, Chief Harrington was talking about getting the criminals and how successful they've been, and they're tracking where in the United States they have come from. Getting the criminals. Let's go back a day to Saturday. You know, we're talking Monday, what happened to us. On Saturday, we come into the airport. We get a text message that a house is being raided. These are the preemptive raids, about a half a dozen of them, that took place over the weekend. We raced to the site. It was the Eyewitness Video Collective. They're very well known in New York, especially
they
by the police.
In 2004,
are responsible probably for the police having to pay out tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for what happened in 2004 at the Republican National Convention. Remember, 1,800 people were arrested. They have video documentation that is winning one lawsuit after another. They will often have the same video the police have, but the police's is edited, and theirs is not, and shows a kid going to get sushi or an older person going to get sushi at a restaurant. Suddenly they're enveloped in a pincer move of the police, and they end up in jail. So there was eyewitness video. They're coming to document what is happening at the RNC here, and they did it at the DNC as well. And their house is raided by the police in a, quote, preemptive raid. They're all handcuffed. Eileen Clancy leads it. They're put out in the backyard. What are they looking for? Computers, cell phones, hard drives.
What happened to the Fourth Amendment? Well, we know what happened to the Fourth Amendment. George Bush and Dick Cheney. I mean, you know, pardon my interrupting. Continue the story.
This is what happened. They're in the backyard. They're held for hours. They're prevented from doing their work. Not to mention, very frightening, there is an AR-15 that one, and I had that confirmed by one of the police officers. I said, you use an AR-15? That's right, ma'am. When they moved in on the group who were sitting huddled in the living room as they saw the police moving in, they had a pistol in their faces. Elizabeth Press, our producer at Democracy Now!, had her camera. She got terrified because she thought they thought it was a gun, so she put it on her head. This is what happened in the lead-up to this celebration of democracy.
Right, and I think what's very frightening about this is it seems to be a political crackdown. It's not that this is even separate from people protesting in the streets where, you know, there's some kind of crackdown on any kind of dissent, but this is a political crackdown.
It's a violent political
crackdown. Yeah, and frankly, the preemptive raids that we witnessed were more frightening in a way.
Well, that's the purpose. It's intimidation.
Right. And there was no, as Eileen Clancy was saying, you know, there's, you get detained, you get held for a few hours, you get photographed and documented, and then there's no real legal recourse. They tell you afterwards, oh, you were held for a few hours, so what? It's not a big deal. You weren't charged. And so it's kind of this, you're left in a black hole.
You're going, I wish actually it was a black hole. It's actually a database, and this is very frightening what's happening with these databases. Did you guys get
we have to take a break here. This is the tyranny of the clock at the bottom of the hour, but Amy Goodman, Nicole Salazar, Sharif Abdel-Kadous.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Back here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio, broadcasting live coast to coast, streaming all over the planet at airamerica.com. And Amy Goodman is with us, along with two of her producers, Sharif Abdel-Kadous and Nicole Salazar, who were all arrested yesterday at the protests. But not even at the protests. I mean, well, Let's just reset this for our listeners who might have just joined us, Amy.
And also, we want to do a shout out to Youth Radio that is here recording Tom's show.
Oh,
and
good,
it's
on you.
Great to be here with Tom Hartman and Air America.
And Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. And their website will be updated within the hour, hopefully.
That's right. Well, the press conference there, the video is there right now. And then we'll put on what we did on our show today as well. We spoke with Congressman Keith Ellison, who is a Minneapolis congressman, deeply disturbed about what is happening
Good
here.
Guy,
and we spoke with the National Lawyers Guild that has their hands full, along with the ACLU, because there are so many people. So far, there are around 300 arrests. The police chief here referred to the criminals, getting the criminals. But given that we're three of the people who were arrested, two of us charged with felony riot, one of us charged with misdemeanor, we were deeply concerned about who else is there in the prison cells.
Let me also say they're allowed to keep you here, which was I was initially told for, I think, 36 or
36
I was told
hours.
I was going to be held for 48 hours. Without being charged, they're allowed to hold you. They have 48 hours to charge you.
But so. You know what? It's beyond that. 48 is small. If you get picked up, it's 36 business hours. So if you get picked up last Friday night, you can be held until Wednesday because you go through the weekend. Then it was Labor Day yesterday, and then you can be held for the next two
what
days.
What a nice coincidence.
So, yes, and we saw this. This is not unprecedented. In 2004 in New York, where we are based, the Republican National Convention, 1,800 arrests. People were held for 48 and 72. It just went on hours. Right. And afterwards, they just figured, you know, we'll deal with it as it happens. Okay, we do the payout, whatever. But at least, you know, until President Bush had spoken, they had people on the pier in these big warehouses. Here, I was held in the garage of the police station. They have these pens for the people arrested. Nicole and Sharif went to jail and basically... this is about yesterday afternoon. They were covering a protest, as there were all day. This was at 7th and Jackson in St. Paul.
Now, this was the anti-war protest,
yes,
right?
Yes, this was
the peaceful anti-war protest organized in advance, told the whole world we're going to do this. Something like 50,000 people down there?
There were tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands.
I'm not sure what the numbers were. Police moved in. Nicole was filming. Nicole is a Democracy Now! Producer. They moved in on her, and as she shouted, press, press, clearly she had that necklace with her press ID on it, right, showing it to them filming. They pushed her to the ground, told her to get her face in the ground, put a boot in her back, pulling her leg at the same time as it telling her to keep her face in the ground, and take the battery out of her camera. If you're one wondering what they didn't want to happen right there, which
right.
is about filming. Sharif gets arrested, thrown up against a wall. He's bloodied. She's bloodied. I get the word on the convention floor. I'm interviewing delegates. I race to have them freed, go to the riot police, say, let me talk to your commander. They immediately pull me behind the lines, handcuff me like they handcuffed them, demand that I sit down, take my stuff. When I say I've got the credentials, as they do, the Secret Service comes and rips the credentials off, and we all go off to jail.
Right.
It's interesting. I'm just watching on the screen here. It's MSNBC, and I was just reading the closed captioning. I obviously can't hear it, and it said, violent anarchists attack delegates at convention.
Yeah, so here we are on the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio, sitting with three violent anarchists.
Watch out.
Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, of course, democracynow.org, Sharif Abdel-Kaddous, and Nicole Salazar, producers for this program. Amy, you mentioned the database as we were going into the break, the last break. The preemptive, you know, the Fourth Amendment says that, you know, you shall be secure in your home, in your personal effects. Here we had, before the convention even started, police coming in, kicking in doors, at gunpoint, holding guns to people's heads while they're going through their houses, taking their computers. Well, tell me what you know about this.
Well, we
You're
followed this. We were all here on Saturday. We followed one of these raids, and it was at the house of the eyewitness video. They're documenting what's happening here, what happened in Denver, what happened in 2004 at the Republican convention. They have endless hours of videotape. I hardly consider these people violent. What they are is preserving democracy in this country. Right? Thomas Jefferson was asked, if you had a choice of government or a free press, which would you choose? And he said it was a free press.
Right.
The watchdog of democracy, and that's what they were doing. They were pulled out of the house in handcuffs. Their stuff was taken. Everything was strewn all over. We have all the videotape of this. Ultimately, they were released. But it was not only this house. As we're covering all of this, which was quite shocking, you know, AR-15s, pistols drawn. We hear down the block there's another raid. So we go tearing down the block. In fact, it wasn't a house raid. It was three young people on bicycles who'd actually left the eyewitness video house on their bicycle. They were riding a couple blocks down. And they were swooped down on. Police made them lay down on the ground. They go through all of their things. So anyone then associated with this peaceful, nonviolent, democratic group that is dedicated to preserving democracy in this country, they are then taken. They're not taken away, but they're held. This sets up a climate of fear. 2 weeks ago, and we interviewed people from the Glass Bead Collective. They're based in New York. They've come here to document what is going on.
Oh, they're out of
in
town.
St. Paul.
Out of town agitators.
And they go to pick up a person at Greyhound at 1 in the morning. They've got bicycles, but they're walking along, and they have everything taken from them, their computers, their cameras. These are the violent weapons that the police are talking about. These are actually the tools of their trade, of simply being good reporters.
Well, in a police state, the tools of the trade are considered a threat, shall we say. And that's the really scary and frightening thing about this. I was mentioning while during the break you stepped out to make a phone call, and I was talking with Sharif and Nicole, and I said, you know, back in the 1960s, I was in SDS at MSU, and you know, I've been pepper gassed, and I've been in what I would just characterize as police riots and dragged off, and it's like a whole new generation is discovering that under the velvet glove of democracy and rah-rah cheerleading that you see at these conventions is the iron fist of the police state. And there's always been that dynamic tension between the police state, all the way back to John Adams, you know, in 1798 with the Alien Sedition Acts. There's always been that iron fist of the police state, and here it is emerging.
I'd just like to add before I forget that there are still several journalists. I'm not sure if they've been released or not, but they were held with us. There's an AP photographer. There are several videographers from Submedia who are also there.
What happened with the New York Post guy? You could tell Tom.
Oh, while I right after I was tackled to the ground violently, I was cut up and with the plastic cuffs tied behind my back. I was on my stomach, and I looked, and there was a man with several cameras around his neck. And he was screaming. He also had credentials, and he was cuffed, and he was saying, "I'm a photographer. I'm not one of these guys. What are you doing? I'm a photographer. I'm with the New York Post." And then he said, "For Christ's sake, it's a Republican paper."
And they still beat him up.
That didn't seem to matter. So.
Amazing. This is just truly horrific. We've got a bunch of callers here, and a couple from Minneapolis. If I can just put one on the air here. Mark in Minneapolis, you're on the air with Tom and Amy and Sharif and Nicole. What's up, Mark?
Hi. I just want to bring a couple of things to light. You know, I was there for the peace march, and all of the estimates that have been reported on mainstream media are talking about 8,000 to 10,000 people. You know, I've been to the Metrodome when there's been 40 and 50,000 people. What are these people afraid of? You know, truthful, there was 40,000 people there at a minimum. Mm-hmm. You know, a half a mile and of people walking up and down the street. Now, I marched with the veterans in the front of the group. I saw very little of, if any, of the violence. I did see one, what I perceived to be highly overreaction. And, you know, in front of me, right at the beginning of the route, I saw some police, you know, take out five or six people with a huge surge into the crowd, and then they tackled and chicken-winged, you know, a single guy, three or four cops on top of this guy.
Right.
But, you know,
But you were at the beginning of it. Apparently this was like more the middle and the end
of
the march.
This was also kind of a breakaway group from the main peace march that was taking place. There were, a few dozen of the anti-capitalist bloc group. And, you know, they did damage some property and throw some things at the police, but in no way asking for that kind of response, that brutal overuse of force against them.
Well, as... If what you were covering was people who were throwing stones or who were damaging property, then I, you know, at a certain level, you could argue that the police chief is right that these were criminals.
Well, not exactly. I mean, what we saw on camera time and again were, you know, the people running away. We were running away, and these other folks were running away with us. And these were the people who we saw getting, you know, pepper sprayed in the face.
So these were not rubber bullets. These were not the people who threw the stones through Macy's.
Where we were, that's nothing that I saw.
Yeah.
You know, these cops, maybe they were hearing things, you know, through some kind of walkie-talkie. I don't know. But where we were, I wasn't seeing anything like that. What I was seeing was, you know, protesters running away. Maybe they were a breakaway group. Maybe the cops didn't want them on the street. But, you know, you have to just imagine a bunch of kids trying to move out of the space.
We have to take a break here. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with the Amy Goodman, Sharif Abdel-Kadouz, and Nicole Salazar of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Check it out. We'll be back.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention, or increasingly the Republican National Police Riot. Here we have with us Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, and Sharif Abdel-Kadouz, who is one of her producers. Nicole had to go off and do an interview with another group.
Radio Bilingue.
Indeed. And Akitha with Youth Radio is also here. She's recording it. And shout out to the folks at Youth Radio. And this is just an astounding story. Sharif, there's three pieces to this story in my mind. There's the preemptive, the whole setup, the whole internet, national intelligence network basically tracking people here, busting into their homes even before the convention started, taking their cameras, taking their computers, trying to shut them down. I'd like to know if you think that they were successful in shutting down some of these groups that were simply here to chronicle what's going on, number one. Number two, the violence that's been used against people showing up here. And number three, the detention of people, the shutting down of protest. So number one, the setup.
Well, in a report we did on Democracy Now! A couple of weeks before the convention is that they set up these massive fusion centers which combined different state, federal, and local law enforcement, as well as U.S. Northern Command intelligence agencies. I'm not sure where in St. Paul it's set up, but it's an intelligence gathering system where they collate everything they get into a massive database. This was reported, by the way, by an online journal called the Colorado Independent, which is doing really great coverage of the conventions. But these preemptive raids were really quite striking, seeing that a video collective of not even people organizing a street protest, not that that would be correct to do, but this is a video collective of people who go out and document and very successfully have done so. If you look at what they did in the 2004 convention.
This is a news organization.
Right. And they go
in. Documentary organization.
Guns drawn, bust into this house with
a warrant for the house next door.
The wrong address.
Oh, really?
They told them you have the wrong address. You have to go back and get a warrant for the correct address. First of all, I'd like to know what judges are issuing these warrants in the first place.
Right.
But
this is a group that was not even protesting.
No, not even organizing to protest.
All they were doing was planning on taking pictures.
They go.
And for this, they get guns stuck in
their face. The police know exactly who they are. That they have been extremely effective in New York. I mean, again, as I was saying, I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars it has really cost New York police, because they continually told stories of people committing crimes like we're hearing here, anarchists, violent outsiders, and the police would present videotape that was doctored, and then eyewitness would have videographers there, and they would show the actual tape. And case after case had to be thrown out.
To the New York Police Department.
And it's extremely expensive as well. Yeah. The New York Times documented all of this using eyewitness video. So them coming to this town, it's not surprising to me.
So
they were one of the first raided.
Have they been successfully stopped from producing eyewitness video?
No, they're out there doing it. But, there was that attempt.
But they were intimidated. They were seriously intimidated.
It was, imagine if you had an AR-15 automatic rifle next to you with a pistol pointed at your head, and you're holding a camera, which you know can be confused with a gun. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to document this, but at the same time, you also want to live to be able to talk about it.
They were given no explanation by the cops who busted in why they were there, what they were doing at all. All that happened was they were taken outside, handcuffed, behind their backs, and held for several hours.
I understand they weren't even shown the warrant until after the fact.
Well, it wasn't even a warrant for their house. When I saw what was going on, including the owner of the house was there handcuffed. I mean, he's been in the community for I don't know how many years. I also get some word from some of the lawyers talking to the police. They're not very happy about this, some of the St. Paul police. They're not happy, but they're being directed from other places right now.
Like Karl
so
Rove.
I don't know what is exactly what that means, but as they were sitting there, you know, they did not want the media to cover this. You know, they're going after videographers, and they don't want videographers covering them going after videographers. So all the press was in the street. They were kept across the street, and they certainly couldn't see. They didn't bring them out to the front yard when they handcuffed all these videographers. They brought him to the backyard, but the neighbor, a very just angry neighbor who'd known these neighbors for some 10 years, opened the front door and said, "Press, they've brought them to the back. I want you to come through my house, and you can go in my backyard. They can't control who goes in my backyard." So all the press ran through the house, and then we were fully videotaping what was happening in the backyard. When I saw the owner and the lawyer for the owner came, I said, would the owner allow me to go onto his property, the owner of where all the police were?
Right.
And the owner turned around, who's handcuffed, and says, "Yeah, I'll do an interview." So I jumped the fence, and I went over, and then the police started to manhandle me there. But then they were in a terrible bind because they were saying, we're not doing anything. They're not actually making an arrest. And then they ultimately just left after hours of doing this.
You know, I talked with a couple of St. Paul police yesterday just as we were trying to get out of this gridlock to get over to the SEIU thing. And, you know, nice guys on bicycles. I mean, there's a lot of decent people on a police force.
There are cops who don't mind being videotaped because they want the bad apples to be weeded out so that they don't get a bad
name. That's right. In any police department, you get a few crazies who are in there because they like the idea of being able to slap people around. And you get a lot of people who have devoted their lives to serving and protecting other people. And Minneapolis and Minnesota in particular have an incredible reputation as being just, you know, good, decent places to live. And I get it that probably a lot of these police are very unhappy with the instructions that they're getting from the RNC and from the Secret Service.
And also, I'd like to note that a lot of nearly every time that I've seen police officers and protesters, there is at least one cop who's filming himself. They have these small cameras on a little handheld tripod or just a single thing, and they're filming. And so, you know, a lot of the cops told me yesterday, "Why were you here? You should use a telescopic lens, stay far away, stay around the corner in these situations." Well, if there's no one there to bear witness and the only video evidence is from the police, who is there to bear witness on behalf of the people?
Right.
And that's why it's so important for us to be there. And that's what I told the cops, and they just don't seem to understand that. But they are out there filming everything as well for their own purposes.
Sure. Well, and apparently, as you were saying, Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, let me get in that plug, that the police in New York were selectively editing the videos.
Oh, my God. I mean, it was so ridiculous. You'd have a guy who's coming for sushi, and you'd see him walking into a perimeter, not having any idea what he was doing. You know, he's just walking in to go to the restaurant, but they don't show him coming out of the restaurant.
Right.
But they have the video of him coming out of the restaurant. They don't show the police officer when he says to them, "Go over there to get out." He walks over there.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from the Democratic National Convention. And
Tom, it's the Republican National.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm a week off.
You're working too hard.
I am. The Republican National. I'm running on autopilot, Congresswoman. We're sitting here with Congresswoman Heather Wilson of New Mexico, and a Republican.
Yes,
sir. And I was on the conference call this morning, and by the way, to our callers, we got a lot of callers from our last segment. We'll be picking up your calls in just a few minutes, and continuing some of the other stories of the day. I was on the conference call this morning, the RNC conference call for the press, at 10 o'clock local time, and in fact, I made some notes. The fellow who was running it, whose name I didn't get, started out by saying that the essence of the conference call was going to be about John McCain, that this afternoon Fred Thompson was going to speak on courage and service, that Joe Lieberman was going to speak on John McCain, the original Maverick, that George Bush may be coming in from the White House by video, either today or tomorrow. There was no mention whatsoever of Sarah Palin's name at any point in any of the official beginning points. And it wasn't until a third question from the press came, where a reporter from Reuters said, is Sarah Palin going to speak, and if so, when and where? He said, and I quote, "We're not going to get into details about Palin's time or speech," end quote. Is this a Tom Eagleton appointment?
No. Today, you know, the folks are talking to you about what is on the schedule today.
Right.
Tomorrow is when we will nominate the vice president, who will be Sarah Palin. So I think today, you know, they were giving you who's going to speak tonight. I mean, the big issue when I got up this morning was, are the speeches going to go on or off? What's the schedule and how they, you know,
right.
They've been calling audibles all day yesterday, so they're now back on track.
Right. Your candidacy in New Mexico, this is going to be a tough race for you, isn't it?
There was a primary in June, so I will be, and my colleague from southern New Mexico, Steve Pierce, mm-hmm. lost won that primary, so he's running for election there. So I will be retiring from the House in January.
Oh, okay.
But it will be a battleground state for Senator McCain. There's no question about that. New Mexico is one of those that goes either way. And so it will be another battleground year in New Mexico.
As a woman mm-hmm. and a Republican,
mm-hmm.
and an observer, I'm sure, an acute observer, a smart politician, a political observer of the whole Hillary Clinton phenomena,
yeah.
And you know, women energized about a political candidate. What's your take on Sarah Palin?
I actually like it. And I'll tell you why. I like the fact that Senator McCain chose an outsider, someone who's a reformer, and kind of reinforces who he is in that way, of being a reformer who's not afraid to take things on and try to do what's right.
But he's voted with Bush more than 90% of the time, since
John
the
McCain,
8 years since Bush came into office.
John McCain is a maverick, and he's always been a maverick. And you know, I've heard those numbers about myself quoted to me, and the reality is that I voted 60% of the time with Nancy Pelosi as well, because most of our votes are procedural votes.
Or so those, bipartisan.
Those percentages don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
What I think does mean something is that Senator McCain has been one of the most willing leaders in the Senate to work across the aisle or tackle big issues, and some of them I don't agree with him on.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't agree with him on campaign finance reform. But he took it on, and he tried to make change in ways that, you know, he thought were right for the country,
right.
And I think he's got a pretty long record of doing that. And Governor Palin is an effective and popular governor in Alaska for taking on a problem up there, particularly kind of insider dealing and corruption.
How is the Republican Party going to respond to a question like this? This, you know, obviously this is a gotcha question. I'll just, you know.
Okay.
2 years ago, Joe Biden was looking, literally, was looking Slobodan Milosevic in the eye face to face and saying, "You, sir, are a war criminal, and I'm going to see you in The Hague." 2 years ago, Sarah Palin was deciding whether or not the town dump should be kept open an extra hour. There's a contrast.
There is. Governor Palin has been governor of a state that has a $10 billion budget, that has 24,000 employees, that by land mass is equal to the size of the entire west of the United States.
That only has 600,000 people.
That's the number one energy producing state in the country. And I, you know, I being a member of the House is tough, but I've been in state in the state government as well as a cabinet secretary. I've served in the executive branch at the federal level. And there's probably no job in politics that is as tough as being a mayor of any town of any size, because your name's in the phone book and everybody knows who you are, and your job is to solve practical problems, to get things done for people. It is the most accountable job in politics, and I don't care how big the town is. So that experience compares well, I think, with Senator Obama, who has done, frankly, very little in a practical way. He's talked about a lot of stuff. Governor Palin has done stuff.
We're talking with New Mexico Congresswoman Heather Wilson. And Congresswoman Wilson, to what extent you know, you've given an enthusiastic endorsement of Sarah Palin and of John McCain.
Yeah.
And there seems to be this, you know, almost in lockstep, you know, here are the talking points. And I saw this at the DNC as well. You know, there's some politicians who will talk out of the box, and there are some politicians who just repeat the talking points. I don't know you well enough to know, you know, what your real thoughts are. Are there in your party people who are concerned about this ticket? We hear about the concern about John McCain himself from the conservatives who think that he's not conservative enough, I guess, or that, you know, they don't like the idea that he's been portrayed as a maverick. Where is the dissent coming from in the party? And what are the you know, bombs in the road, or whatever they call them, you know, potholes, I guess would probably be a better metaphor given that we're at war.
Yeah.
What are the potholes ahead for this candidacy?
I think that I was on the platform committee last week here, and there was an expectation that, gosh, there are so many things that can go wrong where there might be, you know, daylight between our presidential candidate and the Republican Party stalwarts. And there's a long list. Climate change, immigration, areas where some of the core of the party may have disagreements with positions that Senator McCain has taken. It was amazing the degree to which people were willing to figure out and come up with what is our platform, given who we are as a party and who our candidate is, and the fact that people worked together and sorted things out. I was concerned that it would, you know, there would be factions that formed or cliques that formed, and sometimes that happened. I mean, that happened in 1996 in a big way, and was, you know, the major news of that convention was the party, you know, tearing itself apart among different factions. That didn't happen, and I think it's been a remarkably unified convention thus far. And also, someone like Governor Palin does excite groups of people in our party and also independents and conservative Democrats who weren't, you know, who maybe didn't really cotton on to John McCain, but they think, hey, this is kind of different.
Sure, sure. Congresswoman Heather Wilson with us from New Mexico, the Republican from New Mexico. Ron Paul is in the next town over in Minneapolis, and he's got thousands of followers there, and they're doing their Paul-a-rama or something like that. I forget exactly what it's called. And the things that he says he's most troubled by, in addition to the war in Iraq, he's outspoken on that, are the fact that the John Warner Defense Act stripped habeas corpus, basically, rather explicitly, habeas corpus, which is mentioned twice in our Constitution, and the right to challenge your arrest and prosecution, and the elimination of posse comitatus in the United States, the law that said that the Army of the United States will never turn its guns on citizens of the United States within the United States. Does the removal of these two things that have been part of American law, posse comitatus since Reconstruction, habeas corpus since the founding of this country, by your party by and large, although there's a bunch of Democrats who are in on this as well, does this trouble you?
When you talk about removal of posse comitatus, exactly what are you talking about? Because if he's reading, and I've had several other issues where folks who are supporters of Ron Paul will make up an issue. For example, saying that there's going to be a North America Union, we'll all have the same currency and so forth. There is nobody who's advocating those kind of things. So they create.
Well, I believe that the defense appropriation bill.
Posse comitatus is still the law of the land.
Are you certain?
Yes.
Okay, then perhaps I have it wrong. Congresswoman Heather Wilson, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
It's been very interesting and informative talking with you. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very much.
16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. We'll be taking your calls right after this, 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for our web stream.
Thank you, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I've been to a couple, even break a few. Don't get me wrong, I want to do it right. I just can't seem to live a virtuous life. Head is by the bottle, heart is by the number. Six or one, half a dozen of the other.
21 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The John Warner Defense Authorization Act, signed October 17th, 2006, says, and I quote, The president may employ the armed forces to restore public order in any state in the United States. The president determines hinders the execution of laws or deprives people of a right, privilege, immunity, or protection named in the Constitution and secured by law, or opposes or obstructs the execution of the laws of the president of the United States, or impedes the course of justice under these laws. End quote. Page 322, John Warner Defense Act. However, according to Wikipedia, which is not always accurate, but nonetheless, as of 2008, those changes were repealed. So perhaps Heather Wilson is right that we now have posse comitatus back. Anyhow, just a lot going on here. We've got the riots and whatnot, as Amy Goodman reported so adequately, so brilliantly, frankly, in our first hour. And the conference call I was on, this was fascinating. I was on this RNC conference call this morning, and they never mentioned Sarah Palin's name. I'm telling you, this woman has... Well, I said she had 24 hours on Friday, and then yesterday I said 24 hours. I'll say it again. She's got 24... I know it's going to be a... It's like the Friedman units, you know. He said, just another 6 months in Iraq, and everything will be great. And, you know, every 6 months he said that for years. I guess I'm probably going to say 24 hours for quite a while, but I'm, you know, Tom Eagleton right here. 866-303-2270. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, John.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller. And
thank
I
you
wanted
for calling,
to call to make sure that you were going to cover the Amy Goodman thing. You did a fabulous job. Thank you so much for doing that. I've not heard any coverage on any other media, and that was a wonderful interview. I want to tell you, I'm a businessman. I run a business. I'm a president of a company that does national distribution. I've been doing it for 28 years. I've been civically and politically involved in my community for all those years. And I just want to tell you and your listeners that I am deeply outraged at what has happened in my city, that the mayors of St. Paul and Minneapolis and the city councils of both those cities and the county governments of both those cities should be deeply, deeply ashamed of what's happened. And you demonstrated it in great detail with the interviews with Amy. And it's on the YouTube. You can see these things. You can see exactly what happened. This is not some kind of assertion. This is a fact. It's there.
No, go over to democracynow.org. They, in fact, one of her producers was sitting here borrowing one of our computers, putting some of the video up while we were on the air. I mean, it's there, and there will be more there shortly.
One other thing is that I live in South Minneapolis. And the Seward neighborhood of South Minneapolis, and I have a business building that I own nearby. And I will tell you that the people that got arrested on the 17th Avenue that were raided, the people of the RNC Welcoming Committee, everything that they have there, I have in my business building, and I have in my garage and in my basement. You know, buckets and nails and hammers and all those kind of things. And it's
right, and this is the stuff that the police have been trotting out in the local media and the local press saying, see, we found these weapons. Look at this hammer. They intended to use this against our police officers.
Right. And we're calling it the case of urine of mass destruction is the new term for that. So there's one for you to use.
Okay, thanks
a
lot, John.
I will see you tonight.
Great.
Right,
I look forward to it. See you at the party tonight. What John was referring to is that there was one of the houses that the police raided had a garage, and in that garage there was a guy living, and the guy didn't have a bathroom, and so he had been peeing in a bucket. And they found the bucket of pee, of urine, and brought it out and said, and held it in front of the TV cameras and said, see, they were getting ready to throw human waste on the police. And no, the guy didn't have a toilet. You know, I'm sorry, in Bush's America, not everybody can afford to actually rent a place that has a toilet. Tough to believe, I know, but Sandy in Alascathero, how is that pronounced in California there, Sandy? Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm just so appalled at what's going on there, and thank you very much for covering it. I got immediately on the telephone to St. Paul Chief of Police to ask what the heck was going on there. They gave me a second number to call, which I did. They gave me a third number to call, which I did, which was a complaint line at the mayor's office. I told them, you know, that I was pretty appalled, and I told them the story that you had told about seeing the young man beaten. And she said, well, you're lying. She said, I said, what? You're saying Tom Hartman's lying? She said, yes. So I have these three numbers, and I think that it would be a really good thing for a lot of phone calls to come in. I don't know if you want to give them or if people want to call.
I'd rather not right now, but people can track them down fairly easily.
Okay. My next call is to the governor, and I don't know what else we can do. We have to speak up.
Yeah. Well, let's keep this in perspective, Sandy. The police have been very restrained in many regards here, and there are always a few guys in any police force who are just itching to whack somebody upside the head. And,
yeah, apparently this isn't a new thing, though. This isn't just with the RNC. I'm from the Midwest. My sister and her family live in Minneapolis. My nephew was riding his bicycle home one evening about 3 years ago and accosted by the police, beaten up, and his bike was wrecked, and then they let him go.
Wow.
I don't know what's going on.
Yep. Yep. Sandy, thank you very much for the call. We've got to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for getting active. Thanks for calling in. Not just us, but calling the police department. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Your America Radio.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Each day I work like a dog. I like to cruise on my hog. I got a tattoo that says life ain't easy. And on the weekends at dawn, I get up, mow the lawn, fix the dryer and the faucet that's leaking. Oh, I'm a working man.
Indeed, working men and women all across the United States. I had a great time, by the way, yesterday at the SEIU convention, giving a little riff on the Employee Free Choice Act in front of 30,000 people. That was like looking at an ocean of people. That was wild. But thanks, tip of the hat to SEIU, both for inviting me to speak and for being a proud sponsor of this program, SEIU.org, promoting the Employee Free Choice Act. You can check it out. Brett Jospe, how do you pronounce that? Jospe. Brett Jospe and S.E. Cupp are here with me. They are the authors of a new book, Why You Are Wrong About the Right, and the website whywrongaboutright.com.
That's right.
R-I-G-H-T. And so why am I right about the wrong about the right? Your first chapter, Republicans are racists.
Yep.
You assert that Richard Nixon never overtly played the race card?
I am asserting that Republicans are not racist, and that this is something that the left has been playing for a long time. It's a game that they've been playing for a long time, and it's incorrect. And we address this in our book. We talk about historically why it's incorrect.
Well, Abraham Lincoln's clearly, the Republican Party was a reform party in 1856 when it was started in Jackson, Michigan in June of 1856. But by the 1880s, it had been basically bought out by the railroads.
Well, no, that's not the case. I mean, if you look, you can look at the 64 Civil Rights Act, the watershed piece of federal civil rights legislation.
The one that Strom Thurmond, the Republican, tried to...
Well, it was also... And the one that Everett Dirksen helped push through the...
You're right.
Push through Congress.
Everett Dirksen was a good man.
And look, I mean, I can say the same thing about Robert Byrd. I can say the same thing about all sorts of Democrats historically who have... who have made errors in judgment.
Here's where I'll agree with you. The Democratic Party, before Abraham Lincoln came along, was the party of slavery. I mean, let's acknowledge that.
The Democratic Party.
And the Democratic Party, through most of the early 20th century, or much of the early 20th century, in the South, was also the party of racism. And Nixon in 68 said, we're going to take those Democrats. And Ronald Reagan, when Ronald Reagan, his speech announcing his candidacy was in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the place where three civil rights workers had been murdered.
And he talked about states' rights.
That's right.
Which liberals love to say is a code word. It's always a code word.
Tell me it's not.
No, of course it's not. That's absolutely absurd. It's not a code word. States' rights has meaning. It has constitutional meaning. Okay? And just because we believe in a federal system as the Constitution requires, just because we believe in the 10th Amendment, which reserves rights to the states that are not enumerated in the federal government, does not mean that we are racist.
Including the right to say, no, you cannot sit in this dining room because you're black.
That the 64 Civil Rights Act clearly establishes that you cannot say that. And I don't know of any Republicans who are saying, boy, we should be able to tell black people they can't sit in our diners. It's absurd. It's a dirty game of politics that's played. You know, when Howard Dean says that the Democratic Party is the white party, it's just, you know, it really, you talk about raising the discourse in Washington and ending divisiveness, and Barack Obama's running on this unity platform where we should bring Republicans and Democrats together. That's fine if you want to talk about that. But then, you know, the head of the DNC says the Republican Party is the white party. I mean, tell that to Condoleezza Rice. Tell that to Clarence Thomas. But are these people not, you know, they're not legitimate blacks because they don't vote along the Democratic Party
line?
Well,
I would say I've been on the floor of both conventions now,
uh-huh.
and there's a lot more diversity in the Democratic convention there was the Republican. Maybe it's just people feel more comfortable. Essie, do you think that there's
something here to this? I don't know. I think that's probably largely anecdotal. I mean, you know, that, I'm sure you're right that that's what you witnessed. But I do want to make the point that, you know, sometimes Republicans are put in a catch-22. You know, when Richard Nixon comes up with the Bilingual Education Act, it's seen as a cheap attempt just to get the Latino and Hispanic vote. It's not seen as a really progressive piece of legislation that should help end this divisiveness, that should help prove that Republicans are an open and inclusive party. But we get sort of the short shrift there.
The second
chapter.
Yeah. The second chapter of your book, Republicans Are Elitist Wasps, The Myth of the Yachtsman Conservative, the William F. Buckley Conservative.
Yeah, that's particularly funny. You know, you see these like Gordon Gekko kind of, you know, movies portraying Republicans in their Brooks Brothers suits and, you know, their gold cufflinks. And that's true. That stereotype exists. But it's funny because there's a completely contradictory one that the left likes to use as well, which is the redneck, you know, Rube from the square states. I don't know how those two go together or how they can both be describing the same voting bloc. But, you know, contradictions come up when you speak primarily in stereotype.
Well, I think those redneck Rubes, to use, you know, what we all agree is an offensive characterization,
right,
used to be called Reagan Democrats.
Well, Barack Obama calls them the same people who cling to guns and religion because they're, you know, they're resentful and they've fallen on hard
times.
Because they've been screwed by 30 years of Republican economic policies.
Well, you know what? We'll see how they vote.
Yeah.
Keep calling them ignorant people clinging to guns and religion.
Are we just forgetting that Clinton was the president at some point? We're just calling it 30 years of Republican policy?
Well, let's talk about that first. Yeah, actually, I am.
Okay.
I am. Because I think that Bill Clinton was a Republican when it came to economics.
Oh.
You know, you're not going to find unanimity in the Democratic Party about Bill Clinton's presidency.
Right.
But nonetheless, let's talk about this. Here we have a party, you know, as Dick Cheney famously said, Ronald Reagan taught us deficits don't matter. And Reagan comes into office. The national debt is in the neighborhood of $1 trillion. The national debt is now in the neighborhood of $9 trillion. Every baby born in America now is born with a $34,000 debt instantly that they owe. And I'm not talking about unfunded mandates or any of that stuff. I'm talking about actual dollars that were spent by Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., the first few years of the Clinton administration, although he corrected that. He actually generated a surplus. And the dollars that have been spent by George W. Bush. This is not the deficit, the debt, the actual debt. We have, in the 30 years since Ronald Reagan, 32 years since Ronald Reagan became president, we have gone from being the largest creditor in the world, the richest nation in the world, to the largest debtor in the world. We are now the poorest nation in the world. We have gone from being the largest exporter of finished goods, the largest manufacturer, we made things, we created wealth, to the largest of finished goods, to the largest importer of finished goods. We've gone from being the largest importer of raw materials that you turn into finished goods, because we're the largest manufacturer, into the largest exporter of raw materials. We now export lumber. We even export waste. We export trash paper to China that they recycle into packages that they ship back to us. We, by any definition of the word, we have become a third world nation as a consequence of 30 years of Reaganomics. How can you possibly say that the Republican Party, which has brought this incredible devastation upon the United States, which, by the way, is very similar to the devastation that happened in the 1920s that led right into the Republican Great Depression in 1929, how can you possibly say that the Republicans are the party of anybody other than the one small group of people who have prospered tremendously from these 30 years,
right.
Which is the top one half of 1%, the people who make more than $700,000
right.
a year?
And presumably we fall into that category as well, as the top 1%.
Well, if you're not making that kind of money, I would characterize you as the guys who got sucked into
right,
it.
Right, the Thomas Frank.
As
the false
no
consciousness,
offense,
right.
But, you know.
Well, no, I mean, listen, I you know, there's so many things I could say in response to your you know, soliloquy there.
Well,
I'll start by saying that
I think the
statement that the United States is the poorest nation in the world is actually factually
we are the most indebted
inaccurate.
Nation in the world.
I think Zimbabwe, which has an inflation rate of approximately 1 million, where you go to buy a piece of bread and you have to pay something like, you know, 10 million, whatever their currency is, I think they're slightly poorer than we are. Also, you're greatly exaggerating the state of economic affairs in the United States. The unemployment rate is lower, and it has been lower under the Bush administration than it was under the Clinton administration. Now, we have right now an economy that is largely driven by a housing crisis, and that housing crisis has led to it has affected the credit markets in other ways, and I'm not saying that, you know, there's no crisis that exists. But when John McCain says the fundamentals of our economy are solid, that's not inaccurate, okay? This has been driven by irresponsible creditors and irresponsible debtors, okay? This is not... We are not a third world nation. We have one of, if not the strongest economy in the world, ultimately. And when you talk about imports and exports, I mean, you know, the dollar has devalued in recent years. I'm not going to deny that. But that's also helped the same manufacturers, the same exporters that the left
is. But it's no substitution for a tariff policy. I mean, we had, from the founding of this country until the 1980s, we had an average 40% tariff on imported goods. It's now 2%.
Right, and it should be.
The result of that is that all of our manufacturing jobs are being shipped overseas.
But what about, hold on, how does the left reconcile this? On the one hand, George W. Bush doesn't cooperate with allies. He doesn't want to have, you know, he's left the community of nations internationally. But on the other hand, when it comes to free trade, oh, screw them. We shouldn't have a robust free trade policy. Yes, as conservatives, we are in favor of free trade. We think that it betters everybody. It helps people all across the world, people who are living in poverty, who have opportunities to create comparative advantages.
So it's really important. You're going to quote David Ricardo. Be very careful, because David Ricardo would not go with Reaganomics. So in any case, with his theory of comparative,
I understand.
Read his Iron Law of Wages if you want to know Ricardo's thoughts on this in his 1814 page paper on labor. So you're suggesting that we should just kick the doors open, that we should not protect any domestic industries, that if anybody in the United States is earning more than 50 cents an hour, they should just get screwed.
Well, I'm not making that statement, but I'm saying that
that's the effect of it.
No, it's not the effect.
The only people who benefit from what you call free trade are transnational corporations that do not recognize national borders. This is fundamentally un-American.
Corporations who employ millions of people, corporations
all around the world.
Corporations and Americans, corporations whose stock values are built into working class people's pension plans. I mean, you can demonize corporations all you want, and certainly you can find abuses, but corporations are the engine.
I am not demonizing corporations. I'm demonizing what you call free trade and what I call trade that benefits only transnational corporations and harms domestic American corporations, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and the American worker.
Okay, but you're taking a position that's not even in mainstream sync with the Democratic Party. I mean, I disagree with it fundamentally. But
I agree with you.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Democrats who would say, no, this guy's way out there. And so, anyway, Brent Jospe?
Yes.
And CE Cup, why you are wrong about the right, whyrongaboutright.com, the website. Thanks, guys, for stopping.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Good to meet you, Brent. 46 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
All my family problems disappeared overnight. We're all taking Zoloft and everything is fine. My sister's teenage just flew out the window. Mama's so happy, she laughs all the time.
Yeah, I don't know if Mama Palin is all that happy. Some questions about whether daughter Palin is even pregnant. We'll see. Boyfriend of Palin is on his YouTube. What is it? No, it's not YouTube. It's a MySpace page. Yeah, on his MySpace page. He says, I don't want kids. Levi Johnson. Yeah, I don't want kids. He says,
I'm an effing redneck who likes to snowboard and ride dirt bikes. I like to play, but I live to play hockey. I like to go camping and hang out with the boys, do some fishing, shoot some S-word, and just effing chilling, I guess. He warns, F with me, and I'll kick your ass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A fine, mature young man to be the father of a child. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Guy in Idaho. Hey, Guy, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just going to say the bad news with Palin has just begun. She was a member of the Alaska Independence Party, which is a movement, or she supported it, the movement calling for Alaska to secede from the Union.
Right. She did a video address to their annual convention.
Yeah, I mean, how can the Republicans support someone for vice president who doesn't even want to be an American?
Yeah, very, very good question, Guy. And this is one of many things that, I mean, these guys, they just didn't vet their candidate. That's the bottom line. They just didn't vet their candidate. So we'll see how it shakes out. Melody in Florida, listening on Wins. Hey, Melody.
Hi, Tom. First-time caller. Thank you for your Amy Goodman interview. It was excellent.
Thanks to Amy for that, too. Amy's an old friend, and it's great. It's just great that she was able to drop by.
Also, when you were talking to Heather Wilson, maybe you need to give just a one-sentence synopsis to we constitutionally challenged about habeas corpus and posse comitatus. And
yeah.
Also, I would like to ask, is this the same Heather Wilson who tried to insert her influence into the DOJ attorney firing out in New Mexico?
It is, and the reason I was going to bring that up, and then she reminded me, I had forgotten, that she lost the primary, and that was the main reason, I think, probably why she lost the primary.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, you know, it's, so I just decided not to beat her up with it. I mean, she's on her way out. But, Melody, thank you very much for the call. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is with us, talkradionews.com. Victoria, where are you?
I'm actually driving home after leaving the White House. I just attended Dana Perino's press briefing.
Did she? You know, I was on the press briefing this morning, the RNC press briefing here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in the Twin Cities, about, you know, the events at the convention today, and they did not mention Sarah Palin's name. Did not mention it until the questions came from reporters. And even then, the answer was rather, well, here's the exact answer. It was, we're not going to go into detail about Palin. So I'm, you know, did Dana Perino mention Palin?
She was asked a question, and she replied to the question, and basically she said that we're staying away from it. You know, that wasn't her exact phrase, but she said we're staying away from it. And she effectively said that all the politicians are declining to talk about this, and we're following their lead. She pretty much said that both sides of the election are staying away from this, and that that's the right thing to do, and so we're doing it too. She refused to be drawn. And she was asked numerous questions by this reporter.
In other words, she's going to follow the lead of Barack Obama.
She followed the lead of Barack Obama.
I noticed that the Daily Kos took down the diary altogether last night. Apparently, after Obama said, you know, kids are off limits, and but if you just Google Sarah Palin and. You know, I mean, just basically anything. One of Bristol, for example. It's all out there. It's not going to go away, and the Republicans aren't going to make it go away. And you know, hopefully it's not true. But if it's not true that she's the grandmother of the daughter rather than the mother, then what that means is that she's a woman who has such frighteningly bad judgment that she would have her water break on her fifth child and have contractions and still give a speech and spend 14 hours on airplanes.
Quite extraordinary. I mean, there are elements of this, and the question does arise, and I think this will come out more also. People who have Down syndrome babies talk about the incredible amount of time that it takes to care for them. How is she going to do this? The answer being, of course, that she is.
Yeah, yeah. So,
it's not really possible for her to do that.
So what's at the top of the news here, Victoria, today?
Well, questions were asked today at the White House about two aspects of the president's ongoing issues. One being that his speech tonight at the Republican convention, which had originally been scheduled to be 15 minutes when he was going to be there, it's been truncated to 8 on videotape. And I asked the question, as did others, about, well, I said, well, wasn't it actually an advantage to the president, an advantage to the Republicans that he was not going to be there, and also that the speech was going to be outside of prime time, given his low popularity ratings, and Dana Perino refused to go there. And so that was up to us, to that we would make those judgments. She certainly wasn't going to go there.
And surprise.
Refused to be drawn on that and on any of those related issues. So basically, she was staying away from everything. The other thing that happened today is that he had a briefing on FEMA, and he was joined by Vice President Cheney and a number of other members of the cabinet, and he spoke about energy and tied this into Gustav, and basically seemed to politicize Gustav by calling on Congress to approve drilling.
This is George Bush.
George Bush did that today.
These guys will politicize anything. Of course, I guess, you know, that's the nature of politics. But Victoria Jones, thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. We'll be back with more of your calls.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Six minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Oh, this is interesting. As Hurricane Gustav wreaks havoc on New Orleans, as well as the schedule of the RNC, right-thinking Americans woke up to some good news Monday. MSNBC's Keith Olbermann will not be covering the festivities, at least for the time being. He's been sent to New York to cover the hurricane. This is from one of the right-wing news sources. I guess they just couldn't handle a real progressive here in town, so they got rid of Keith Olbermann. Well, they got him out of town. Welcome back. Kerry Carrigan is with us. Kerry was with us on Friday of last week. Kerry is the program director and morning show host at KUDO, K-U-D-O, our affiliate in Anchorage, Alaska. Kerry, hey, welcome back.
And thanks very much. Hope you're enjoying that convention for twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, this one's more like a funeral. I mean, it's incredible. It's like a wake. People in Denver, people were walking around smiling and hooting and hollering and slapping each other on the back and having a great time. And you walk around here, and it's like, I mean, it's funereal. I don't know how to describe it other than that. There's just this sense of doom.
If it's a wake, maybe they'll start drinking at some point.
Yeah, there you go. Kerry, on Friday on the show, you made the comment that Sarah Palin's daughter, Bristol, her name is now out in the public. You didn't name her. I didn't at the time either, and in respect for her being underage, but
right
now her mother has named her, was pregnant. And I got all this email, over the weekend. How can you say that? Maybe her mother had the baby, blah, 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 but, pregnant? And truth be told, I think, between both of us, and I'd like to get into this with you, it seems to me that arguably this may be the smallest of all the stories, but nonetheless, you broke some serious news on our show on Friday.
Yeah, well, it wasn't big news here, though. Part of this is, like I was talking about, it being a small community in Alaska, and I've constantly heard this across the course of the weekend from all the different talk shows and all the different commentators I've heard, is that Alaska is very small, and it is. When you look at Alaska on a map, it's huge. It's 20% the size of the landmass of the lower 48, and yet we have only 300,000 people in the Anchorage and Mattsu Bowl. That's half the population of the entire state. So it's there's nowhere to go. I should mention that as well. And so it's a very small community feel. So it wasn't any real big secret here. The rumors have been flying for several months.
So the official timeline that's being put out by the Palin candidacy or campaign or whatever is that she became pregnant in March and will deliver in
December,
her daughter, which means that she couldn't have given birth in April if she became pregnant in March, which
right
means that the official story that Sarah Palin has put out, that she, while her water had broken and she was having contractions, decided instead to give a speech to an energy group and then fly for 14 hours back to Anchorage, is true. There are skeptics. I've been reading the blogs on this thing. There are a lot of skeptics who are saying, maybe she's pregnant for the second time around. After all, this is a family that does not believe in teaching sex ed to their kids or human biology to their kids. Maybe she believed the myth that you can't get pregnant for the first year after you've had a baby, or some other myth, and she simply just got pregnant again quickly. Or maybe she's not pregnant at all, and she'll conveniently have a tragic miscarriage right after November. You know, you're in the middle of all this in Alaska. What's your sense of what's the real story here?
Well, you know, there's still some confusion because I don't know if you've caught any of the blogs that have been over the weekend and some of these pictures from some of the websites that were taken down from MySpace and Facebook that were up and, right. And some of the pictures. And I got to tell you, one thing that's just absolutely terrifying everyone is these Facebook images and these MySpace images of these kids from the valley, which is just north of Anchorage, the Mattsu Valley, where Wasilla is. And it just makes them look like a bunch of crazy partying, you know, animals. I don't know if you've seen those photos or not, but
apparently not.
Yeah,
but I have seen, you know, the one photo of Governor Palin pregnant that was put out to prove that she was actually pregnant with this last child.
But
apparently it wasn't dated, and the comment was that her hairstyle was the way she wore her hair 7 years ago when she was pregnant with her last child.
Yeah, with Piper. And she tends to stick to the same styles hair-wise, too. That doesn't really surprise me. And I think Trigg may actually be her child, but the only other option for that, and if you've seen these pictures, is that possibly it's her oldest son's baby, and it's possible that there were two babies out of wedlock, but no one really knows that for sure. What's really the most puzzling is...
You mean there's another mother involved that we don't know about?
Right. And the thing that's most puzzling is her judgment. Even if Trigg is actually her baby, which really would seem to be the case, why would you make such an insane judgment call when you're in labor to fly from Dallas? You'd have to stop in Seattle. Remember, it's a four-hour flight up here. So you'd have to stop in Seattle, refuel, and then fly on. And you'd have medical facilities in Dallas, medical facilities in Seattle, and then an absolutely phenomenal three hospitals here in Anchorage. And then you go on and you drive 40 miles north up into the valley, and then you stop at a very small hospital and have your child.
Now, and that small hospital, by the way, has a website where they announce births.
Right.
And you can go to that website and you can look at every day in that week, and there's no reference to a Palin birth.
I know, and that's part of the problem too. We had this discussion this morning on the air, and by the way, I should mention I talked to somebody who that you might be interested in, Lyda Green, who is the president of the Senate, was on the air with us this morning, and that might make it a little sidebar here in a moment, but. You know, it's interesting, too, that there are so many pieces that aren't tied up. Is there another mother? Where's the birth certificate for Trigg? What's the timeline with Track and this other woman who has not been identified yet, whose pictures are all... And they know we're up in the valley. If you were to take a picture up to Wasilla, you'd probably be able to track her down fairly quickly, but they haven't identified her yet either as well. So
we're talking about her oldest son's girlfriend, her oldest son who's about to ship out to Iraq.
Right.
And so the new rumor is that Trigg is actually the child of her oldest son and some other woman.
Yeah, and so there's...
This is starting, you know, this is so National Enquirer that it creeps me out, frankly. And if it were anybody other than a candidate for Vice President of the United States, I would say this is just so off, you know, out of bounds for at least a political talk show.
Yeah,
maybe on The View, you know.
I know, and I wish, and this is kind of the sentiment we've gotten off of the locals that we've been talking to here on the air, is we wish that it was more, can't the boy just come forward, this young man come forward with Bristol if this is the case and say, look, this is our decision, this is what we've decided to do, and we...
But he said on his MySpace page yesterday that he doesn't want children.
Right, and now that's closed off, too. I mean, all these people who are involved in this, all of a sudden, they're locked down and they're pushed back, and the only person who's saying anything is Sarah Palin, and that's part of the problem as well. This woman I talked to this morning, who's the Senate President, Lyda Green, who was a friend of Sarah Palin's for 12 and a half years, and then the last 18 months, things have really soured as there was a big power struggle between the executive and the legislative branches here in Alaska over the gas pipeline. She was of the same, you know, opinion. It's all very strange, and that Sarah's the only one saying anything at this point.
Was she of the opinion that Sarah had been pregnant with her last child?
She seemed to think so, yeah. But at this point, what's so unusual, too, is, you know, now remember that Sarah, in theory, was 7 months pregnant and no one knew she was pregnant.
Right. That's she told her staff when she was 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And they were shocked.
Right. And these are people who deal with her every day. You'd think at some point she would have said something or someone would have noticed something.
Well,
you would
think that at some point she would say to her chief of staff, by the way, I am 5 months pregnant or 4 months pregnant. And
right.
We found by amniocentesis that this child has a birth defect and or is going to be a Down syndrome child, which could be a very complicated pregnancy. And I may, you know, please keep, you know, be aware that I may have
right.
to just drop my schedule at any moment for a medical emergency.
Right.
It just seems like the kind of thing that somebody with any kind of reasonable judgment at all would say to their chief of staff if they have a busy schedule.
Yeah. And that was never, ever brought up or brought out at all until 7 months in.
Yeah.
It's a crazy scenario, and it doesn't make any sense to anybody here either. Though a lot of people are willing to believe Sarah Palin at face value when you look around and talk to people, because she's very popular here in Alaska. She has got this, you know, she's going to smile at you and tell you what you want to hear and move on.
Right. So and Alaska is a relatively Republican state too, and she's
a relatively
libertarian Republican state.
It's a very independent state, really, but the Republicans are—they're very. Stay out of my face, no government, don't spend any money. But they're all willing to take the permanent dividend check.
Carrie, I'm assuming you have a good stack of stuff on the positions, on the politics here with regard to Sarah. Is that the case? Can you stick around for the next segment and we can talk about politics rather than babies?
Sure, you bet.
Great. Carrie Kerrigan is with us. He's the program director at KUDO. KUDO in Anchorage, our affiliate in Anchorage, Alaska. We're on the air there as well. And we'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Martin here with you. Carrie Kerrigan on the line with us, the program director and morning host at KUDO, KUDO in Anchorage, Alaska. One of the many radio stations, fortunately, we really appreciate our affiliates who carries our show. And thanks, Carrie, for keeping me on the air there.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And welcome back to the show. At a certain point, I think all of us just kind of, you know, it's like take a shower time, you know, let's, the weird goings on, although let me just put a punctuation mark on this and then we can bury it. Sarah Palin, of course, married her husband and just a little less than 8 months later had their oldest child.
Track, right.
And Track. Track is his name. And so the head of the Family Research Council this morning gave this comment about that to The Hill. I'm reading this from Tuesday, September 2nd, The Hill. And this is... This is Tony Perkins, Family Research Center. Fortunately, Bristol, this is her out-of-wedlock teenage daughter, is following her mother and father's example of choosing life in the midst of a difficult situation. So mom and dad had a shotgun wedding. The daughter does, too?
Apparently so. You know, like I said, the most fascinating thing is there has been no comment from the young man himself. And I would hope that if he's really serious about this, that this is really his choice, that he would make a statement with Bristol and distance himself from all this and let them focus back on Sarah Palin and her, you know, her lapses of judgment. But
Let's focus in on Sarah Palin and not just her lapses on judgment. I think we've treated that quite well. I'm concerned, frankly, about her policies. This woman seems to me like a female Dick Cheney.
Yeah, she is. You know, but she's more malleable than that. You know, Cheney is very rigid, and Palin will hold her line and not move from her issue. As a matter of fact, Lyda Green, the Senate president, was running again in the valley, in the area where Sarah's from, around Wasilla. And she was a very powerful legislator in the state of Alaska, Senate president, and had brought together a bipartisan coalition to run the Senate. And yet she got out of the race. She withdrew instead of running as an incumbent for re-election because of her, the fact that she said, people won't listen to me. They're listening to Sarah Palin, and they're making wrong choices, and I'm not going to be involved in the process anymore. And she got out.
But that speaks well to Sarah Palin's political instincts and abilities, doesn't it?
It indeed does, yet she's not like Cheney in the sense that she can be directed by somebody who will feed her ambition. And
I see Cheney as the dark force behind everything. I think that there was a reason why, you know, when Bush and Cheney testified before the 9/11 Commission, the ground rules were that Bush couldn't speak unless Cheney was sitting next to him,
right,
and that Cheney could not be required to drink water while Bush was speaking.
Did you see the end of Palin's acceptance speech when she was with McCain? How she began to fumble, and she's not that talented in front of a crowd. She doesn't have that much experience in speaking in these. She'll come up to step very quickly. I've known her since '87.
Yeah,
she'll come up to speed in quick succession of these different appearances.
But her parallels to Cheney, in my mind, are that she believes that if she's the executive, she should have power, and to hell with the structure and the law.
Oh,
and we saw this in Troopergate,
yeah,
and we've seen this in a few other things, apparently, that she's basically a power freak.
Absolutely. If indeed this child who's got learning disabilities is hers, it's all about being VP and not about raising a five-month-old baby.
Yeah. Well, but even beyond that, I mean, setting aside the whole child issue, that in her dealings with the legislature, in her dealing with the president of the Senate that you were just citing, these kinds of things, in many of these situations, also when she was mayor of Wasilla, apparently she ran this community into some $30 million into debt.
Yeah.
In order to, quote, make improvements, end quote. This was back when she was gung-ho for the Bridge to Nowhere. And a lot of and she was the head of the Ted Stevens is a Good Guy committee.
The 527 listeners. And remember, a lot of these earmarks that she got came from Stevens directly, too. That was part of the funnel of the way that money worked. She'd get in there, she'd do things for Ted and raise money for him. But then on the backside, Ted, as head of the Appropriations Committee, and everybody calls him Uncle Ted up here, but he would feed that money back into these communities.
Right, which furthered her political career.
Absolutely.
So, and not to mention, you know, just right across the board, all the right-wing positions that she's taking on pretty much everything, and including the drill, you know, let's drill some more.
Yeah, and
so,
her whole agenda has been drilling Anwar as well. That's another policy she's been pushing. And this is the woman who wanted to spend state money to show you that the polar bears were fine.
Right.
So,
at the same time that she's all in favor of hunting bears and wolves from the
aerial hunting, yeah, and
which
no
seems
fair
like
state.
Very sportsmanlike.
Yeah, it's and she'll so one minute you'll see her in her photograph working fishing with her in-laws netting in Bristol Bay to gather fish, and the next second you turn around and she's making a public statement telling people how to vote on the pebble mine issue, which could destroy the Bristol Bay fisher.
Yeah, a little bit of inconsistency there.
No,
interesting.
Across the board. Yeah.
Yeah. Kerry Carrigan, the PD and morning talk show host at KUDO, KUDO, in Anchorage, Alaska. Kerry, thanks for dropping by.
My pleasure, Tom.
Always great talking to you. It's the Tom Hartman Show. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this. Stick around. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Very much. Justin, keep it going. Yeah, welcome back. Here we are live from the Republican National Convention at in St. Paul at some corporate named center. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And let's see here. Pamela in Dearborn, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Pamela, what's up?
Yes, I'm calling about Heather Wilson.
Yes.
She has been very, very unpopular in New Mexico, as well as Patricia Madrid, who is on the Obama campaign as a Democrat. But you mentioned that because she is no longer going to be in the party, that's why you avoided saying anything about her being involved in the DOJ firings. And in my opinion, I think Democrats in general should discuss all the issues. I think she should have been questioned about those firings.
Yeah, in retrospect, Pamela, I don't disagree with you.
Yes.
What the details were, and tried to get some of the details from her, but you know, I didn't. So hopefully next time I'll do better. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to talk about the situation with Amy Goodman and journalists there in St.
Yes.
Paul.
Yes.
Before I do, I just saw Chicago 10 last night, the sort of half-animated documentary-esque film about the 68 protests, and it was incredible. And really, when I woke up to this story, it was like, am I still watching the movie? It was really strange.
Right. Deja vu all over again.
But I called Keith Ellison's office, and I called Senator Amy Klobuchar's office, and both of them are receiving a lot of calls about this, but I would just encourage your listeners to keep calling and even their own congressmen. You know, journalists ought to be able to cover any situation, whether it's a riot, a fire, whatever. They should be able to cover it without being arrested themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And frankly, there's no reason arresting people if they break the law. I'm all in favor of beating people up when you arrest people when they break the law. Gratuitously or unnecessary. I mean, those are Rodney King moments, and we really don't need those.
The lawsuits are going to warrant a lot of money going away from Minneapolis and St. Paul, but the important thing is for Congress to actually do something about this. This happens every time there's a protest, and the lawsuits and the payouts aren't changing it.
Yeah, you're right. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, I met Amy Klobuchar on Sunday. I was at a fundraiser or a meeting, a get-together, a meet-and-greet. She was there. A number of members of Congress were there, and she, boy, what a neat person. She's just, you know, solid, down to earth. Just really struck me as a very nice person. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart.
Yeah. Speaking of police abusing their power, it's become very clear that the chances of the Republicans and the neocons that run that party to a terrible degree won't be able to keep their power after this election if it's a fair and free accurate election.
Let me take it a step beyond that, Stuart. I don't believe that the Republicans have won a fair and free election since Nixon was outed. You know, the whole October surprise thing of cutting a deal, George Bush cutting a deal with elder George Bush cutting a deal along with Bill Casey with the Iranians to hold the hostages to take down Jimmy Carter's candidacy and put Ronald Reagan into office. I believe that was a setup. The two books, October Surprise, both well written about that topic. Give me the creeps, but I think that they're it's the only explanation, frankly, that makes sense to me. And George W. Bush, you know, he was installed by the Supreme Court in 2000 and 2004 in Ohio. The irregularities were so massive that you can only say this was a stolen election. So, Stuart, I'm with you. I'm of the opinion that the GOP can't win an election without stealing it, which is why they're going to do everything they can to try and steal it this time. Dave in Chicago. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, how's it going, Tom? Thanks for leaving a signed copy of Cracking the Code at Google News for me. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for asking for it.
Okay, this vice presidential pick is one more piece of straw on the back of a dead, rotting camel's corpse that the terrorist threat to this country is nowhere near what the neocons say it is. That's all I wanted to throw in there.
Yeah, okay. Well said, Dave. Thank you very much. Marilyn in Los Angeles. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi, Tom. Okay, I want to preface this by telling you that I'm one of the people you write about who has ADD, so sometimes it's really hard for me to get my thoughts together.
That's okay. Welcome to the club, Marilyn.
Okay. Yeah, but you're so good at filtering information, and I get log jammed. But this is about the Sarah Palin issue. I got a really interesting email last night that came originally from a woman in Alaska who wrote all about Sarah Palin and her governing style and the way taxes were raised on the lower class people, and they cut corporations a deal, and her firings, and how she tried to fire the city librarian because she wouldn't take books out of the library that Sarah Palin didn't want in the library. But she goes through with this long list of things and interchange, and it's fascinating. But I don't want to put the woman's name out on the radio because I don't want to violate her privacy.
Well, this,
but
if
I would
we're talking
love
about the same
you
email,
to read this.
Well, if we're talking about the same email, I've gotten 20 copies of it, and it's all over the web. It's the one where she says, for example, as mayor, she had her hand stuck out as far as anyone for pork,
yes,
from Senator Ted Stevens. Lately,
yes,
she has castigated his pork barrel politics and publicly,
right,
humiliated him.
I would like us to talk about that and not be talking about who had whose baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is the meat on the bones, you know?
I agree. And what's going to happen, well, I agree, and I'm telling you, for the Republicans, for the party that is, quote, family values, end quote, the party that is opposed to teaching human biology in schools, for that party, this is going to be a problem. And frankly, that's why I think that it actually is a news story. But I agree with you that there are a lot of policy issues here and a lot of bad governance issues that are just, you know, are equally worthy of exposure, and we will be continuing to expose them, assuming that she continues to be the nominee. My point is that I think that the Republican Party would never drop her in a million years for being an opportunist politician and a right-wing politician and a power grabber. I think, if anything, those things would endear her to them. But if she lied about a baby or she's got a kid with an out-of-wedlock child, that, for the Republican Party, is what's going to freak them out, and that's what's going to take her down. So, you know, we'll see how it all works out. But, Marilyn, thank you for raising that point. It's well said. Mike in San Francisco. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Gosh, there's been so many issues. I want to say to the last caller, I believe that the hypocrisy of the baby issue, the hypocrisy of the sex education issue is fair political game, that the Republicans are trying for us not to talk about it. But I initially called to go back to Amy Goodman, and what your first caller today talked about people breaking the windows, and I want to put in the issue of how Amy knows a lot about how the groups have been infiltrated by the FBI and by the National Security Forces, and I also want to talk about the agent provocateurs, that that we can't dismiss the fact that the police may be creating the criminal acts, and I believe
I've talked about this a couple of times on this program. I was in SDS at MSU back in the day, back in the late 60s, and there was this one, actually he wasn't the only one, but there was this one guy that was really outspoken. And he was, you know, he was always the guy who was like, you know, oh, we got to kill the pigs, you know, we got to set a building on fire, we got to get people's attention here. Nobody, you know, this war is never going to end if we don't actually take down the state, you know, and all this. I mean, just this incredibly inflammatory rhetoric, and really trying to get people whipped up and trying to get people to go out there and do things like breaking store windows. And 10, 15 years later, when a number of the people who were in SDS filed lawsuits against the state police for the Red Dog Squad and FOIA filings and things, what we found was that this guy worked for the state police.
Yes, I think that this is a tactic that's being used again. It's COINTELPRO.
And that was 68. That was 40 years ago.
Yeah, and it's all back today. It's back 10 times worse today. So I think that before we dismiss people being beat up and the Republicans, your story about the Republicans sitting across the way while the kid was being beat up and standing and cheering is absolutely fascistic, horrible. I mean, I was just stunned when you told that story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the call. In fact, Janet, who was with me, she was just horrified. I mean, what we all were. I mean, everybody was. Robin in Pinckney, Michigan. Hey, Robin.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to get back to baby gate again, if you don't mind.
Okay.
It makes no sense to me that if the Republicans knew that the daughter was 5 months pregnant, they wouldn't have put that out right away so it couldn't become, you know, fodder later on or at some other point in time. And if they were trying to quash the rumor about whose baby Trigg really was, that they wouldn't just produce a birth certificate.
Yep.
and none of that has been done, and instead we're getting all these funky timelines.
Yeah,
so,
and another, yeah. Do you have time yet, or?
You got 10 seconds, Robin, if it's
okay. Okay. One other thing. When she attended that governor's conference on energy, she was 8 months plus pregnant at that time. So she actually flew from Alaska to Dallas over eight months pregnant.
Right, which is against the, not just only medically insane, it's also against the policies of the airlines. Thank you, Robin.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Cause your motives are wrong and your bombs are not smart, or I wouldn't see children with lives torn apart. If a fox hid himself under my chicken's nest, Lord, you'd blow the whole farm up and you'd call it success. But you opened my eyes, cause it's time to say no to the military industry running this show. And it's time for the greedy on Capitol Hill to send their own sons and daughters to die for their will. Not Buddha, not Allah, not God sets us free. Not the person up front saying, listen to me. I won't give up my rights to a mere pack of thieves, wearing suits and big smiles with a trick up each sleeve. Cause it's my right to know all that they do, and they don't do a thing unless we tell them to. Cause they represent us, not those big wigs uptown. They wanna fight about that, then I'll go a few rounds. I'll stand and let my voice be heard. I'll stand and let my voice be heard. I'll stand up.
51 minutes past the hour, 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters. The Teamsters Union vigorously fighting for the Employee Free Trade Act. Boy, do we need it. This is, the Employee Free Trade Act is the right to register to vote in a union election. And it is so necessary. Anyhow, Teamster.com, singular, Teamster.com, their website. Tom in Miami, you want to disagree with me about something here. What's up?
Well, I had two points about Amy Goodman. I just wanted to say there's a bomb show on the network.
I'm sorry, you're Tom, I can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me?
No, Tom, your phone is just all busted up. I'm really sorry. I love to have people on who disagree with me, but I literally cannot make out the words you're saying. Hopefully we can try it again. Doug in San Diego, you want to disagree with me? Hey.
Oh, you know. Yeah, you're gonna love me now.
Okay.
Now, listen, Tom, I listen to you a lot of times, and I like you a lot, believe it or not, but I think progressives, libertarians, and conservatives have a lot in common. But you were talking to the Republican, Brent, and he made a comment about free trade, how conservatives are for free trade. Now, he has to be corrected. Conservatives are not for free trade. Conservatives are for fair trade, and such conservatives as Newt Gingrich, Pat Buchanan, and even Sean Hannity are against free trade. And if free trade is so good, you might want to ask the Republicans, why not triple or quadruple the trade deficits and see how good that is for the country? So we're not for free trade, we're for fair trade.
Doug, you know, in this area, Pat Buchanan and I agree. And apparently you and I agree. So, you know, I think it's about America. I think it's about putting America first. And every country should, by the way. I think every country should be looking at their relative comparative advantage, to correctly paraphrase David Ricardo, and say, this is what we do well, and these are the industries that we want to have. And I think it's nuts that we can't build a missile without a chip from China, the only country in the last decade and a half that has actually threatened us with a nuclear bomb. I just find that crazy, and I know that there are conservatives who find it crazy too, I'm in the camp with them, and most progressives find it crazy, I think it's an American thing. Doug, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Well said. Marilyn in Vancouver. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi. Love your program, Tom. I've been voting Democrat for 50 years, and you still help me.
What I was wondering is if Palin is put in as VP this week, next week, could she possibly resign due to pressing family problems like overpopulation, and then put McCain appoint Lieberman as his VP without having to go through a Republican convention? And the other comment I had to make real quick is that the danger to me of Palin is that if she becomes president in the middle of the night at 3 a.m., the phone rings, that she reaches for the breast pump instead of the phone. Thank you.
Oh, that's... I guess a woman can say that. Marilyn, thank you. I wouldn't. But if I was betting, and I don't, but if I was betting, my bet would be that within the next 24 hours, by noon tomorrow, and at the very worst, by 48 hours from now, but I believe tomorrow is the day that the vice president gets nominated, that she is going to say, you know, it was a tough decision with a special needs child who's 3 months old, but I thought I could do it. But now that I'm going to be a grandmother and my daughter needs me very much, I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to pull out of this race. That's what I think is the storyline, and that she will be replaced by Mitt Romney. But time will tell. I've been wrong before. I thought Mitt Romney was going to be the first choice. So, who knows? We will see. Kelly in San Jose, California. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You had a couple of guests on talking about their book earlier.
Yeah.
And they were talking, he mentioned Zimbabwe. That was the only country they could come up with, that was doing worse than the United States as far as when you were talking about the debt. And he just mowed right over the issue, walked right through it, and he cited Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
I was appalled. I wanted to just, like, scream. So that was my comment.
Well, thank you. Well said, Kelly. Yeah, it's not so bad. We're not as bad as Zimbabwe. Thanks. Thanks, Republicans. Dave in Michigan, last words?
Hey,
we have just a few seconds, Dave.
The suggestion. You might, that Rolling Stone article, which was very comprehensive about the election fraud, that might be a great interview with me. There were four or five people from that report that might be a great interview for it.
Now, we have done a number of shows in the past, Dave, about election fraud, and we will be doing many more in the future. It's a topic that is near and dear to my heart and to the listeners of this program. Thanks for bringing it up. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back tomorrow live here from the RNC, the Republican National Convention, in the Twin Cities, in St. Paul specifically. And we'll keep you up to date on what's going on with the police riots. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on with Sarah Palin and everything else. And of course, all the news of the day. You know, are we going to be at war with Russia? Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.